Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome back to Say Why to Drugs. As you may know, I've been quite busy over the past year or two, really, as I had a baby last year. I'm just returning to my day job after maternity leave, and it's coincided with having a short run of podcasts ready to go as well. Coming up over the next month or so, we'll have episodes about spiking, which has been in the news a lot recently, a live podcast recorded at Latitude Festival earlier in the year, among other things. But I'm starting with this one, as next week is both Baby Week and Alcohol Awareness Week. So my colleague and friend Dr. Abby Rose approached me about an episode around maternal drinking, which is obviously also very relevant to me personally, as I've just become a new mum, well, a year ago. We're joined by a midwife as well, so I hope you enjoy our conversation, and I also want to flag an event that's occurring on the morning of Thursday the 18th next week as part of Baby Week. Abby's organised an interactive online session for mums and mums-to-be to talk about these issues. There's an Eventbrite link in the podcast notes where you can sign up, it's free, and I'll also share it on Twitter as well. Whatever your thoughts are about alcohol, you're welcome to join and join in. There's no judgment, just information and your chance to suggest to researchers and healthcare professionals how information and research can be improved. That was a really long intro, so without further waffling from me, we say why to maternal drinking. So I've got two experts that I'm joined by this week. So first off, can I ask you both to introduce yourself? I'll start with Abby.
Hi, I'm Dr. Abby Rose. I'm a senior lecturer in psychology at Liverpool John Moores University. My background is experimental psychology, so I'm really interested in understanding why we drink, how we drink, and how our drinking might increase the risk of various alcohol harms. I used to get people drunk in a lab to do that, and then I had two little munchkins of my own, and I'm now really interested in alcohol use during pregnancy and motherhood.
And Lila.
Hiya. So I'm Lila Goodman. I'm a midwife, and I'm also a mum to a three-year-old and a five-year-old.
Perfect. So Abby, do you just want to say a little bit about why you thought this episode would be a good idea? Because I should take no credit for this idea. It was entirely Abby.
So as I said, I've had two children of my own, and I've always been interested in alcohol use. And when I became a mum, I suddenly realised that mums talk a lot about alcohol and drinking and the need for drinking. I also noticed that my social media feed suddenly seemed to be swamped with very funny memes about the fact that I needed to drink to cope with my own children. And I kind of knew some of the risks around drinking with, obviously, during pregnancy, but not so much around motherhood. And I think the research has always been focused around alcohol use during pregnancy because there are obvious risks. There's things like alcohol fetal spectrum disorder, which you had a great podcast on. But when mums have the child, we tend to forget about their behaviour. It's largely ignored. Then that can be for lots and lots of different reasons. But actually, as evidence does slowly grow, we know that drinking during motherhood can have quite a range of harms, from quite mild to quite serious, both to the mum's health and mental health and well-being, but also to the child and the larger family. So that's what I'm really interested in, kind of like starting to shine more of a spotlight on that area of drinking, not just when the woman is pregnant.
And Lila, as a midwife, what's been your sort of experience of this kind of issue of maternal drinking?
So I think there's very little conversation about drinking after you've had a baby. Also with breastfeeding, sometimes mums are really unsure about how it would affect the baby if they have a drink. But I think for me, the biggest thing when I had my own children was actually co-sleeping, drinking and breastfeeding. Because actually having a drink whilst you're breastfeeding isn't the main issue. But I found that I couldn't breastfeed without co-sleeping. And actually co-sleeping when you've had a drink is just a big no-no. So really, like, having those conversations with mum is so important.
That's really interesting that you mentioned co-sleeping, because obviously I had a baby about a year ago. In fact, when this podcast comes out, it'll be almost exactly a year ago. Happy birthday, Elliot. But that was the only time alcohol was really mentioned. Actually, so it was around breastfeeding in a workshop that I did before I gave birth, which I don't know whether it's specific to the Liverpool region, but there's a real push for breastfeeding, I think because rates are quite low in this area. And so they're really, really, like, it was mentioned about 4 or 5 times in this hour that it's absolutely fine to drink alcohol while you're breastfeeding. And I was sitting there thinking, is that actually true? Because some alcohol definitely gets through in the breast milk. I don't think it's particularly very much. And I guess they've weighed up the evidence and decided that it's better to encourage breastfeeding. And if the thought of not being able to drink at all is putting people off even trying, then it's better to say you can drink a bit. Obviously, they did say that if you're going to get plastered every night, then that's not a great idea. But it was very much like, it's fine to drink and breastfeed. You don't need to pump
interesting.
And dump. And,
because actually I think the conversation needs to be about why people don't breastfeed, because they actually need to be able to co-sleep. And that's kind of going off topic here.
Yeah. No, well,
that's one of the biggest barriers, I think, when mums feel like they have to try and put this baby down who wants to constantly be on them, which is, you know, totally normal and okay. But actually then having those conversations and giving the women the information is really...
Yeah. That was the other only point that alcohol was really mentioned, was around co-sleeping and how it's an absolute no-no.
Really,
so that was something that from charities like the Lullaby Trust, that kind of thing, it was very clear that you shouldn't co-sleep with your baby if you had a drink at all. I mean, and for me, similarly to what you were saying, that meant certainly in the early weeks and months, that alcohol was a complete no-no, even if I'd wanted to, which, to be honest, I was so tired all the time that I thought it would be a terrible idea. But yeah, Elliot was... He didn't want to sleep in the next to me crib or whatever. He just wanted to sleep on a human or very, very, very close to a human.
Yeah.
So, and specifically me as
well. I was going to say a human.
Yeah.
You.
He would go to sleep on a dog, but it was definitely more, he would pretty much want to be on me all the time.
Yeah.
So co-sleeping is a bit of a side issue to what we're talking about today, but... You do worry about it because you hear about the increased risk, and the increased risk is really, really heavily associated with having consumed alcohol.
Yeah, it is. But I agree with you that the inconsistent advice around breastfeeding alcohol is crazy, because I had it as well. So I was a member of, peer support groups and all sorts around breastfeeding. And the message was, and I think you're right, it's that kind of try, push anything that will increase rates of breastfeeding. And the number of times I saw him say, as long as you remember you've got a baby, you're not that drunk that you've forgotten you have a child, you can drink alcohol.
Wow.
And I remember I used to sit there and go, oh, I don't think that's all right. I don't think that's the message we should be giving. But yeah, it was interesting. But there was a definite, the camps of, no, it's okay to drink if you're breastfeeding.
So what do we actually know about... sort of patterns of maternal drinking and after a woman has given birth? What, is there much evidence in this group?
So this is one of the challenges in terms of research. So there's a historical image of women. They don't drink that much. And certainly there is a gender gap between alcohol use. So men do drink more than women, but that gender gap is decreasing a lot, and that's driven by increased alcohol consumption in women. It's not because men are drinking less, it's because women are drinking more. And then also there was this idea that if a woman became pregnant, she would stop drinking alcohol and would never drink alcohol ever again, kind of thing. And that's not what happens, strangely enough. So when women do become pregnant, most women do stop drinking, at least once they've found out that they're pregnant, or they reduce their alcohol use a lot. So that's great. But we still need to kind of focus on alcohol use during pregnancy, because we do have one of the highest rates in the UK of alcohol exposed pregnancy, which translates into one of the highest rates of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, unfortunately. But then when mums have had the baby, as I said before, there tends to be this where you just forget about what the mum is doing. Everything is about the baby. The baby's healthy, so everything's fine. And what we tend to see is that, yes, during those, that maybe that first year postpartum where everything is so chaotic and you may be co-sleeping and breastfeeding and just getting through every day as best you can while keeping this little bundle of joy alive.
And every night.
Yes, also. Every night and every day and every night. And there is no night or day anymore because it's just one long, you know, being awake. We might not be drinking that much because, yeah, the thought of having a hangover or something like that, it really puts you off. And we're also very aware that we are, you know, responsible for this baby's life, so we have to be there for them. But as time progresses, we see that mums are more likely to start drinking again. Absolutely fine, that's what you would expect. But before, it was kind of seen as, well, mums won't start drinking again because they don't go out anymore. So we drink alcohol when we go to pubs and restaurants and things like that. And that's just not the case anymore. So the majority, I think it's like 2/3 of alcohol, is not purchased in pubs and restaurants. It's purchased from shops. We can get an online delivery of a case of wine or, you know, a box of beer, however many pink gins you want, whatever. We can have it in our house. And we know that if something is available in our house, whether it be alcohol or chocolate biscuits or whatever, we're going to consume it. And so if you have alcohol in your home, it's very easy for it to become a part of your daily routine. And I think that's where the shift comes. So maybe when the really chaotic period is kind of like starting to ease off and you might start to get the baby to go to sleep in their own bed, in their own room. You know, you've got women who have been with their child all day, which is exhausting, kind of like, you know, entertaining them. You know, it's lovely, but it's also, it is really, really tiring and you can feel quite isolated. Or you might have a mum who has gone back to work, so they've got a full-time paid job and then they go home and then they're doing the, oh, I've been at work all day, I've got to spend some quality time with my child, I've got to bathe it, get the food ready, da-da-da-da-da, get them to sleep. And then, so you go through this whole day, which is quite full on. You never really get a moment to yourself. And then suddenly the child is asleep and you go downstairs and you let out this big sigh and you suddenly think, now it's my time. I don't have to think about work. The child, you know, my child is safe asleep upstairs. I'm going to make myself something nice to eat. I'm going to sit down in front of the TV. And it's very easy as part of that routine is to pour yourself a drink. And I think that's where things have changed. So we've got to understand that the way in which we drink has changed, and that has allowed maternal drinking, like drinking during motherhood, to become much more normalised and part of our routine. It's kind of, it can act as a switch to say, now this is my time, and to de-stress. And we've done several kind of studies, surveys and qualitative studies, so when we interview people kind of like either one-to-one or in small groups, and it's very common for mums to say drinking is the thing that helps me de-stress at the end of the day. It's my quick fix, it's my reward to myself. I deserve this drink because I've been doing all this stuff all day every day and now it's my time. And I think the other important thing is with when we talk about maternal drinking is when we talk about harm. So, you know, if alcohol didn't lead to any harm, there would be no problem. We wouldn't need to be having these conversations. But alcohol does increase our risk of lots of different harms, whether that be physical health, mental health, our well-being. And over years and years and years, we have this idea in our head about what is harmful drinking. And when we think about harmful drinking, we tend to think about binge drinking. We tend to picture often men, not women. We tend to picture people who, as soon as they wake up, they're thinking about drinking. They're drinking early in the morning. They're drinking much more than they intended to. They're drinking to the point where they can't remember getting home. They're blacking out and things like that. And when we think about harm, we tend to think about very obvious severe harm again, things like alcohol-related liver disease, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. But actually, when you look at drinking behaviour and when you look at alcohol harm, there is a whole spectrum. So it does have that severe end, but it has moderate and milder sides to it as well. And so when we're picturing ourselves drinking as mums, if we're drinking kind of like a glass of wine in the evening, something like that, we're not getting drunk. We're not having an obvious hangover the next day. We're still, you know, getting on with everything. We're still fulfilling all our roles. So we don't recognise our drinking as problematic in any way. But actually, once you start to talk to mums about it, because they always, whenever we talk to them at the start, it's like, oh, I don't have a drinking problem. I don't drink much. I certainly don't drink as much as I did before I was pregnant. And then we get them to start talking about the role that alcohol had in their lives. So prior to pregnancy, it's often, oh, I drink to socialise. I was going out, getting drunk with friends at the weekend. And yeah, sometimes I would drink too much and I couldn't remember getting home, or I'd fall over, something like that. And then they say, but now I'm a mum, I don't drink like that anymore. I hardly go out. I will have a glass of wine or a bottle of beer or something, or I'll pour myself, it's often a gin and tonic. I don't know why I hate gin, but yeah, they often say I'll have a gin and tonic, you know, in the evening. And once you actually start to talk about women, about their drinking, say, well, how often do you do that? And I say, oh, well, only a couple of times a week. And you say, okay, so when was the last time you did that? Oh, last night. Okay, so can you think of the last night where you didn't have any alcohol? And they suddenly find it quite difficult to remember. They say, oh, actually, I do it most evenings. But again, I'm not getting drunk, so it's okay. But actually, when you were to top that amount of alcohol up over the week in terms of like alcohol units, which is what we measure alcohol consumption in, they are drinking at least within hazardous drinking levels. They have gone over that that lower risk guideline of up to 14 units a week. And they just don't realise it. And that is completely understandable. We shouldn't be shaming women. We shouldn't be looking down our noses at women for doing this, because it is so easily done. And it fits with the narrative that is sold around motherhood these days. You cannot go online and see anything that isn't saying that all mums are drinking. And all mums are drinking in order to relieve stress. That's what it is. And there's on the flip side of that, there's also this narrative around, you're a mum, you know, good motherhood is all your time is spent on your child. Your only concern is your child, not you, it's your child. And so occasionally you're allowed to break away from that. And the way you break away from that and to retain some of your old identity is to drink alcohol.
It's like doing something grown up, isn't it? Yeah. And all the things that you were sort of talking about, it's completely sort of understandable that women do feel like they need a treat after a really, really hard day. And I mean, I've certainly, like, particularly the nights when it's a struggle to get him to go to sleep. But when you do eventually get to come back downstairs and sit down on the sofa, for me, it's been chocolate. I just, like, immediately want to eat all the chocolate I can. Mm. And to be honest, it probably would be alcohol if I wasn't worried about him waking up four times in the night. To me being even more exhausted.
For me, that's the difference, that now mine are older, like, and they do sleep through. You could have pretty much been describing my drinking habits there. Like, most nights I will have a small glass of wine. And that is a lot more than I used to, because it used to just be the pub or going for a meal. Or...
And as I said, we absolutely should never blame women. And I get really fed up when... And I completely understand it when we talk to women and they say, I just feel like ever since I got pregnant, I'm not my own person.
Yeah, other you're people. Constantly being told what to do and what not to do, and what not to eat and what.
Exactly. Absolutely. They feel as if they're other people's property. And I talk to a lot of women, they say, I'm just so fed up with my doctor or health visitor or somebody telling me how to behave. You know, I'm a grown woman, I can make my own decisions and my own choices. And I think that's something that's really important. And there are lots of barriers around why mums underreport their drinking. And this is another reason why I think there hasn't been as much research, because we've got this historical thing of, well, women don't drink because they don't have the opportunity to drink. But also there are an awful lot of barriers for women, especially mums, to report how much alcohol use they have. It's fear because they're worried about the consequences. So will social services get involved? There's the stigma. They don't want to be looked down upon. They're desperate to be seen as a good mum to their family, their friends, healthcare professionals, everyone. So there are lots of reasons around that. But also they're just fed up. They're almost like, well, I don't want to tell them how much I drink because I know that's going to then, you know, I'm going to feel like I'm being told off or something and told how to behave. But then every single time, whenever we do these interviews and these focus groups and things, there's always a bit afterwards where we explain why the recommendations are what they are, what the evidence is. Because again, a lot of the women say, well, one of the reasons why they continue to drink is, they said, well, the evidence is so mixed. You know, I've got this person telling me I can drink whatever I want. I've got this person telling me that alcohol is bad for me. I've got this person telling me, you know, all these different things. And then when we sit down and just take, you know, it's 5-10 minutes where we just clearly go through each piece of evidence and why this is, you know, this is the recommendation, why this is the recommendation. 9 times out of 10, I would say, they go, oh, well, why wasn't I told that? Mm-hmm. And if I'd been told that, then that makes sense. And I would have, you know, made my own decisions around it. So that's something I think that we need to be changing.
Yeah. And Lila, what's been your experience of sort of talking with mothers or mothers-to-be about alcohol use? As a midwife, do you have to, is that part of what your role is or not really?
It is. So at the booking appointment, which is their first appointment when they come to us when they're pregnant, we do a whole like history taking and we ask about alcohol consumption pre-knowing they're pregnant and then what they are drinking now that they know they're pregnant. And to be honest, all the time it's not drinking, and then often a partner might chip in, but one small glass of wine is okay, you know. And I try and explain, actually, you know, fetal alcohol syndrome is on a spectrum, and you know, we don't know what's the safe limit at what stage and how it affects the baby. So no, we would really advise that you don't drink anything. And it's like you said, it's about explaining that, but these are really short appointments given the amount that we need to cover. So it's a really brief conversation. And in terms of talking to mums once they've had the baby, apart from the co-sleeping thing that I have only really brought into my practice as a mum who went through that, you know, the guidance really is to try not to co-sleep, but
everybody does
if you exclusively breastfeed. And I feel like it's really important that we share the information from the Lullaby Trust that you said about not drinking and how to safely co-sleep. But other than that, we don't have a conversation about drinking alcohol with a baby. And I think that's probably where the 6-week check would come into play more. But like Abby was saying, you know, when we discussed this before, it's a bit hit and miss how that 6-week check is.
So the 6-week check is when the woman and her baby both go usually together to a GP, and it's partly to check over the baby and do sort of hip checks and all that kind of thing. But also it's supposed to be for the mum as well, and in particular around mental health and any sort of physical recovery from the birth itself. Speaking to other mums, obviously I went through this fairly recently, and yes, it was right in the middle of a global pandemic, which means that GP appointments and everything were challenging for everybody, but it was really varied speaking to other mums that I know about whether and what happened in this meeting. So my personal experience was actually great, and I had a great chat with the GP, and she asked me lots of questions about me and sort of made sure that it was about me as well. But I did specifically ask when I booked the appointment that I wanted one for the baby and one for me. But speaking to other people, some people didn't get either. Some people got very cursory. Some people had it over the phone. You know, it's completely varied. And I guess maybe that's at different stages during the pandemic as well. But it does seem like more broadly than just during COVID, these things can be quite varied.
Yeah.
And quite often it's done at the same time as the jabs. So the first lot of injections for the baby, which can be quite traumatic. So asking about mental health just after you've seen your baby lose it having been injected is also probably not a great time for those kind of conversations
and
as well.
Also, I think it's really quite early on to be talking about
drinking. Yeah, you're still very much in the...
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, I don't remember alcohol being mentioned in mine. It was mental health very much so.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you coping? Not really. Sorry to hear that kind of thing. Yeah. I think if I'd wanted help, I could have got it at that point. I didn't think I needed it, but I was really struggling and I was sort of saying, I think I'm coping, but I haven't seen anyone other than midwives since my baby was born, and that's really weird.
Yeah. I think as well, so we've known that maternal mental health problems, like postnatal depression, postnatal post-traumatic stress disorder, and all those sorts of psychological distress seems to be getting worse. That has got worse again during COVID, but there was an increase happening anyway. And so you talk about the maternal health check. So this was actually new policy. It was on the cards for a while, but then in April 2020, so not ideal in terms of bringing a new piece of policy in, was that there would be a specific maternal health check. So it was recognised that often when you're going to your GP or GP kind of like health team, so it could be a you know, a practice nurse, that it tended to be about the baby. Is the baby okay? Checking everything is all right. And, you know, understandable, yes. But again, the mother almost like fades into the background.
During pregnancy, you get prodded and poked.
Yeah.
And then once the baby's born, it's like, oh, look at this thing. See ya.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is. And this was kind of recognised. And because we were seeing this increase in maternal mental health problems, there was this argument, no, we need something specific for the mums. And so there is supposed to be a 6 to 8 week check, which is just about the mum. The baby is, you know, shouldn't be mentioned. This is all about how are you? How was the birth? How are you adjusting? How are you feeling? How are you coping? You know, what's it going? And it's supposed to be whoever is taking the appointment, so whether it's the GP or the practice nurse or something, is really supposed to talk and let the mum talk and to listen and to see what is going on and whether any help is needed. But you're right. To talk about alcohol at that point, it might be too quick. But the reason why it's perhaps important to get it on the mum's radar is that we know if you are suffering from mental health problems, you are more at risk of starting to drink alcohol. Yeah. And you are more at risk of drinking some more. And you're doing it to cope with the symptoms of mental health problems. And again, what we find, which is really interesting, it goes back to my earlier kind of interest in alcohol and why I got interested in terms of my research, which is why do we drink the way we drink? So what is driving our drinking behaviour? So I'm really interested in our motives for drinking. And again, when we talk to mums, the motives for drinking prior to being pregnant is more about social, going out with friends, having a good time. So they're what we call positive reinforcement. You're drinking for the pleasure of it. During pregnancy, that kind of social reason is still there. So, for example, I wanted to have a drink at a wedding because I wanted to feel part of that wedding and to enjoy it as I would normally. But they're like creeping in, like the stress of being pregnant. I've had a drink to calm down. And then in motherhood, when we talk once the baby is born, 90% of the time, really, really strong motive is I'm drinking to unwind, I'm drinking to cope. It fulfills that narrative, that online narrative that I'm talking about, all those memes about kind of like, you know, you can't get through a day without drinking. But mums are talking about, yeah, it's my way of calming down. It's my way of de-stressing. It's a quick way to just decompress at the end of the day. So we are seeing this shift in more kind of like coping-based motives. And that can be coping for the daily stress of just, you know, being a mum, a busy mum, or it might be coping for more serious, you know, mental health conditions. And the other thing is, even if you have symptoms of mental health problems that wouldn't actually reach a kind of a diagnostic threshold for something like postnatal depression or PTSD following a traumatic birth, you are more, you may still be more likely to drink in order to cope with those symptoms. The only thing I would say, again, that's very interesting is, and we see this across the board with mental health problems, is that if you are suffering from a mental health issue, you are either more likely to drink in order to cope, or you are more likely to stop drinking. So it goes one of two ways. Okay. We see this kind of split. And something that I'm really interested in understanding is, well, what makes that decision? What influences that? What makes the person either not drink, or what makes them turn to alcohol in order to cope with those symptoms and those kind of negative feelings? And I suspect partly some of that is to do with knowledge and evidence, because I know, so from my perspective as well, another reason why I got really interested in this, because I had an awful second birth where I was diagnosed with postnatal PTSD, and when I eventually went back to work after about a year, and I had treatment and things, and I remember being in that that situation where I was having lots of very, very nasty intrusive thoughts, and the kind of just couldn't get them out of my head. They would play on a film reel and they were really awful, and you couldn't sleep because they're going around in your head constantly. You're very, very anxious, you're hypervigilant, so you might often, you know, be snapping at your kids because you're so worried that they're going to get hurt. And I know, even with my background and the fact that I didn't drink during pregnancy because I know all the evidence, yeah, I thought a drink would help. And immediately when that happened, I was like, no way, you know, kind of like cut it down and do it. But that's because I knew the evidence, and I was still at risk, yeah, of kind of doing it and drinking. So when I went back to work, I became really interested in that link between postnatal PTSD and drinking risk, because we know from other populations, which are you often think about with PTSD, for example, military populations, there's a lot of research around alcohol risk. And for mums, it's just not there. And so I spoke to kind of like quite leading figures who are experts in the field of postnatal PTSD and maternal mental health. And I was like, am I just missing the evidence? Where, you know, where is it? And they said, oh, I don't know of any. I don't know of any. And it kind of echoes back that idea that once you're a mum, your health, your behaviour kind of really takes a back seat. And I spoke to some people who said, well, I don't think that's, I've never come across that as a problem. But I was like, well, have you asked the mums how they're drinking? Have you asked them what do they do? Have you given them time to open up and trust you? And you can talk to them in a way that actually gets them to think a bit more about their drinking behaviour. And then, and again, no, you know, no disrespect to them, no blame to them, but it was often, well, no, we talk about other things. So there's a possibility that this might be something that's happening, and we don't have the research in that. So that's something else that I think we need to look at a bit more carefully.
The one thing we haven't really talked about is there's potentially, I know you said that there's a lot of evidence that suggests a lot of the reason for mum's drinking is to cope, but there is also the kind of the society that we are in is very, it's like socially alcohol plays a huge part in our social lives and our sociability, and new motherhood is such a time of new, like everything is new, you've got this new baby to look after, but also you've got to really make a whole new group of friends, because you need your crew who are going through the same thing as you. You need that support. It's hugely, hugely important. I found it, frankly, essential to yeah, meet other mums who are experiencing the same things as me. And the way that I became friends, I hope they won't mind me saying this on here, but the way I became friends with my little group is that we went to a baby class and then we went to a pub garden afterwards. Yeah. Well, this was back when very few things were open, and like that's how we sort of became friends. And so not necessarily drinking alcohol, but being in an alcohol environment, mm, and some people were drinking, some people weren't drinking, it kind of didn't matter whether you were or not, but it was being in that environment sort of cemented our friendship. So while we know the harms of alcohol, at the moment the way that our society is that alcohol is part of the social glue in our society.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this is another reason. So I'm this weird mix of professional academic understanding, but also the lived experience of being a mum.
Yeah.
And exactly, you get to this point where you suddenly have this baby and you go to these weird classes that you would never go to normally, and you're thrown in with this group of the vast majority, it's women, and you're thinking, I need to make friends. How do I do that?
Complete shift of identity, yeah, isn't it?
It is. And you bond over drinking. So this was another, and I used to watch and I used to be part of these conversations, and I used to observe, like, they're all after 5 or 10 minutes of chatting, it would get to a point in the conversation where it was like, I'm looking forward to a drink. It was that kind of, and I remember thinking, is this really happening? Is this behaviour really happening? Are these women genuinely going home and drinking? Or are they using alcohol as a way to bond, as a kind of like, yeah, as a shortcut? And I think it's a bit of both. Yeah. I mean, I say a bit of both because I then started going to, as time progressed slightly, and you suddenly started going to, you know, one-year-old birthday parties where they will remember nothing and it's just chaos, that there would almost always be a few mums there who brought alcohol in bottles and things, whether it be in a park or somebody else's house, and drinking in the middle of the day. And I was thinking, most, you know, these people, if it wasn't for them having babies and being in these parties, they wouldn't be drinking Prosecco at 11 in the morning, usually, on a Saturday. And that, you know, they were all kind of like, you know, that, oh, you know, let's have a drink. And, oh, don't you need, you know, it was there. So it was happening. But I completely agree that, and I'm not, and when I'm interested in this research and things, I'm certainly not going down the route of, mums should never drink alcohol. That's not what I'm saying at all, because I think alcohol can have its benefits, and that's, you know, with every health behaviour, everything has benefits and risks, and it's about knowing the information and understanding that information within the context of your own drinking behaviour and your own life to make the decision of, well, where do the risks and benefits outweigh each other? Like you were saying, at the moment, all you want to do is eat chocolate. There are benefits to that, I know.
There are also risks. I've been telling you about those.
Exactly. There are risks. So, and after a while, you weigh them up, and then you might, you know, you might only let yourself have several cubes of chocolate rather than the entire
thing. I think a lot as well is about, like, opportunity to have the conversations, but also knowing what's around. So When I was pregnant with my first, I'd just moved to Liverpool, so I didn't know anyone. So I made a real effort that was how I was going to kind of build up my social life as well. So I attended loads of pregnancy classes. And actually, in Liverpool, we're really lucky. There are loads of, like, pregnancy fitness classes, postnatal fitness classes. But nobody sits down and tells you that. Like, you have to really go digging. And as a midwife now, I try and say, oh, have you heard about this? Have you heard about that? But it's not like, there's no kind of one package of information of how to go about kind of accessing different ways to socialize and reinvent yourself as a pregnant person and a mum and all the rest of it. So yeah, you know, having the conversation, particularly as a midwife and like health visitors at the GP check, about what other things are out there for women to make their own decisions. You know, some of it will be making the decision to go and have a drink with other mums, and you're right, you do need that sometimes, but some of it might be like doing postnatal Pilates or something like that, you know, physically trying to put yourself together after a birth, that kind of thing. So
I think that's such a good point. I think we should try and wrap this up, but end on a sort of positive note, because all of us have a sort of professional reason to be interested in this topic, but also a personal reason, because we have all gone through pregnancy and motherhood at various different stages, and so thinking about alcohol is kind of relevant to us all. And I think I'm right in saying that all of us either do drink or have drunk in the past. So it's not like we're sitting here saying, oh, you should do this and you shouldn't do that, because we're talking about our own experiences as well. But from that kind of professional standpoint, what should we as researchers or we as healthcare professionals be doing to kind of help with this idea of, like, informing and empowering women to know the evidence and be able to make their own choices about these things?
I think in terms of research, there is some brilliant what we call qualitative research. So is that this is like interviews and focus groups where you're really talking to people, for you're having conversations with them, and then you're kind of like, so you're understanding for that person in detail why they drink and how they drink and things like that. And I think that kind of research is very important, because it gives this kind of depth of understanding, and it places alcohol within the context of different mums' lives and how, you know, various issues might influence drinking or not drinking. But the quantitative data, so like the, you know, the numbers,
the stats, the
beautiful stats, we tend to pick those where we can. So there are existing what we call cohorts data, so that, you know, they might be following babies from birth and things like that, and there might be some information about the mums in there, but it's secondary information. So the level of detail of the data isn't great. We might not be able to ask the specific questions that we really want to ask. again, when people are filling in those data sheets, they know that the, you know, the research is actually about the child, so they're much more focused about that. They might not pay enough attention when they're filling in information about themselves and things. So we really need to invest in much better longitudinal data collection. So we are following women up from prior or very early to pregnancy up and really focusing on the woman. Women's health is important in and of its own right, and we need research focused on that. It's not just about the baby. But having said that, the other thing is to like get people more interested in this. In terms of maternal drinking, we mentioned that, you know, about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder during pregnancy. Maternal drinking specifically is involved with a whole host of risks for, you know, for the mum in terms of physical health, you know, increased risk of breast cancer and all those sorts of things, mental health problems, but also the child. So maternal drinking increases the child's risk of things like sudden infant death syndrome. So we talked about co-sleeping, medicinal poisoning, ending up in hospital, bone fracture, mental health problems and physical health problems as they go older. Also children then developing, you know, alcohol problems as they get older. Again, all these things, the bond between mums and their children can all be affected. And that isn't just when mums are drinking at a level of alcohol use disorder. You know, so we need to be aware of that. We need to be putting more research into that and understanding why women drink, how they drink, and then also working absolutely with women, saying, how do you want this research to take place? What questions should we be asking you? What do you want to know? And then when we have that information, how do you want to be told this information? How do you want to be given this information? I don't want to tell women, don't drink. You've got to behave like this. I want to tell women, okay, drinking is completely normal. I'm not saying you shouldn't drink, but you need to be aware and informed so you can make empowered decisions about your own behaviour. And that's what we need to be doing. And we need to be working with midwives, with GPs, with other healthcare professionals, with third sector like charities who work with the women and say, okay, how can we contact these women? How can we approach them? How can we engage with women so they are happy and they feel that we are on their side and we are not stigmatising them anymore for their behaviour?
And I think one of the things that quite often gets missed out in this kind of sort of alcohol education, if you like, is that it's not just about the quantity, but it's about the behaviour. So we've talked a lot all the way through this about things like drinking to cope and helping women to identify, like you did yourself, Abby, and I did myself when I had a miscarriage. When you start to notice your relationship with alcohol changing, empowering you to make a change, where if your relationship with alcohol is as you want it to be, no problem at all. Yeah. But if you notice your relationship slipping and that you're starting to use alcohol as a crutch, or you're finding yourself opening a bottle of wine every day, or just having a larger glass each day, mm-hmm. and it's spiralling like that, that you can spot that in yourself and take action. So as you say, there's sort of two ways people go if they are struggling with their mental health and their relationship with alcohol. It's either stop or massively increase.
Yeah.
And so helping people to steer them towards the less harmful path. Lila, I think you've kind of already said a little bit about potentially what healthcare professionals can do, but
So I think mostly it will be about engaging in the conversation in the first place and, you know, trying to give information, which is quite hard to do when you're really time restricted. But I guess health visitors are probably going to be best placed in the long term with mums. And like you said, there needs to be a focus on maternal health and not just the baby and, you know, the child development and all the rest of it, actually looking at women and their health.
Well, that seems like a great place to wrap it up. Abby and Lila, thank you so much for your time, and thank you everyone for listening. And there we are. I just want to flag again in the podcast notes, there's a link to Abby's workshop. So she's running an online session from 10 until 11:30 on the 18th of November. She'll talk in more detail about what we know and what we don't know about drinking during pregnancy and motherhood. And she'll also be talking about her research plans in the area.
What she's really interested in is getting women involved in this work, hearing about what women think are the important issues and questions in this area, and what they'd like to see being done in terms of research, and what they think women need in terms of information and support. She also really wants to hear from groups who work with women, especially pregnant women and mums, to make sure that any research in this area is the most useful it can be and any resources can be made available where needed. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for listening all the way to the end, and see you next time. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.